supposedly on the El Al midnight flight, and I just got myself moved up to the 3 p.m. flight just now. I figured, look, I have to get to Florida tomorrow because you're all invited tomorrow night to Century Village in Boca Raton for my Kalbach concert for Shlomo Le's Yahrzeit. And as I explained to El Al, it's going to do me no good to come in to New York tomorrow night. I'm going to have to be in Florida already that time. So I got squeezed on. I'm going to sit on the, I took the wing seat. You know?
Right.
It's better than the bathroom seat, right? Vidyuk. Co-pilot, why didn't I think of that? Shoot.
Well, they could have put you in the bassinet.
All right, the bassinet. Yeah, people think I'm a big baby, so that could have worked, actually. Okay, we can close our cell phones, except that I'm going to leave mine on vibrate just in case I get a call again, because that's going to be important.
In case they cancel
me, right? To say the last night's flight is leaving today, which means it's like I know what's going on. The pilots are making trouble. They're sanctioned. They're calling in sick like 2 hours before the flight. Yeah, and that's not a healthy situation. Okay. Making progress in the Sefer Mitzvot of the Rambam, I'd like to deal today with something that he talks about in his very introduction, and that's the nature of the 613. We've said often enough that 613 is not a number that came down from Sinai. The sum total of Mitzvot, the question is that nevertheless a biblical assumption, something that was from Sinai as an oral tradition, certainly not mentioned in the Chumash, or is something that our Chachamim just came up with a number because of a variety of reasons, but the sum total include not only biblical, but also some of the rabbinic add-ons. Yeah.
Question from last week.
Bakasha, ask. Good, ask.
We were talking about being Mekadesh Shabbat, being Mekadesh Yom Tov. Similarities and differences, and I asked, why do we add the Ahava?
Ahava Ratzon. I'm as smart today as I was last week. And I'm not going to tell you to ask you next week, and I don't have a chance even to look this up. What Ahava of Ratzon differs from Simcha v'Sason for Yom Tov, if we understand. That we say Simcha v'Sason, and the Ratzon, this we do understand, because we say the word Ritzeh Hashem Elokeinu in Birkat HaMazon on Shabbat, and Ritzeh is a type of tefillah without, it's a tefillah non-tefillah. No, the tefillah is a direct petition. You're asking for such and such. Ritzui is a type of illusion that you need something. The Rav explained the second bracha of Shmon Esrei as being Ritzui. When you say somet noflim, brofei cholim, matias rim, you're not asking for anything specific, but you're just alluding to the fact that you recognize that God is the one who does these things. Later on, in Shmon Esrei, you get to Rifaenu, you can get down to specifics, including name. Shabbat, we do not have in the Shmon Esrei direct petition. That's why all the center brachot from Atachonein until Shmei Tefillah is out. What we do have is a type of petition that's very spiritual. Kachenu b'mitzvotecha, v'techerkenu b'torotecha. There are things there that, behind the scenes, there are many, many other things that are on our minds that do relate to Shabbat, but we don't spell them out. For example, we make a mishaberach for a chole on Shabbat, we say, Shabbati milizeok, it means, on Shabbat you're not allowed to yell for this, but nevertheless, refuah krova lavot, the person should have refuah. We say this on Shabbos, which in a sense really means that on Shabbat, we shouldn't even be making a Rabbi Shabbat for Chayla, because you're not allowed to daven for directly. We don't daven directly, unless it's a crisis, whatever. But so the Gemara says, so you, what you say is, you ask a Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's almost a type of nisht of Shabbos garet. You know, on Shabbos, you don't talk about this, but, and you go on saying what you want to say. So you say, Shabbati milizahok, urufa'a kurova lavo. So that's called Ritzui. Ritzui is where you get the message across, but in an underhanded way, not in a direct way. So that's what the Ratzon is. That on Shabbat, it's a day that the halakha does allow for this measured type of tefillah to go on. Ahava, what it means in this context, I don't exactly know why Chazal put it in, because I know in the Mafsa and Yom Tov, when the Shabbat falls out on Yom Tov, it says in parentheses that to stick in the word. I have to check it. Yeah.
I think I remember, my memory may be bad, but in Yemei Koran, I think the Rav makes mention that the Ahava might be there because with Moed, it was a day of going out, Aliyat HaRegel,
right,
where Shabbat comes into the house.
Yeah, he said this in
the opposite direction.
So right, so the question is, why is that
the
Ahava?
Ahava?
Okay, that's a homiletic thought. On the idea, right, exactly what you're saying is that on Shabbat, we go out to Beit HaMikdash, and on Shabbat, Kadosh Baruch Hu is welcome to our home. Yeah. We've said this in the context of why we don't, Nusach Ashkenaz, there's no Lecha Dodi when Yom Tov falls out on Shabbat. Because Lecha Dodi is the very welcoming of a Kadosh Baruch Hu into our homes. But if you're not going to be home, so why welcome a Kadosh Baruch Hu to the home? So the question was, why in Nusach Sfard there's an abbreviated version of the Lecha Dodi? You say the first two stanzas and the last two stanzas. So that doesn't make sense at all, because the poem revolves around the acrostic of each stanza leading to the next. And hey, you chop it up, you do the first two and the last two. It almost, the whole poem really loses its punch by doing that. So what does that mean? Why did Nusach Sfard do that? And anyway, no matter how few stanzas you say, you're not really going to be home, because even if it's Shabbat, you're supposed to be in Beit HaMikdash for Aliyah LeRegel. So the Rav used a very interesting analogy to understand this. Sometimes at our workplace, it could be in an office, it could be a school, in a teacher's lounge, a teacher making a simcha, making a bar mitzvah, marrying off a child, whatever it is. You feel almost obligated to invite the whole staff. You can't start pick and choose, oh, you're friends with this one, not so much with that one. So those who you really want to attend the simcha, they get personal invitations, however you do it today. But then on the bulletin board, an invitation is posted, and the teacher writes in, handwriting, you know, just see this as a personal invitation. And that's how it's left. When I see such an invitation, I know one thing. Don't go! Because if the person really wanted you to come, you would have gotten a personal invitation. So why is that invitation up there? It's the niceties of the workplace. That, you know, some people come over to you and they'll say Mazel Tov, and you share your simcha on that level. Maybe on the day of the simcha, you'll bring a few bottles and some cake and cookies, and something is done to have everybody join. But in terms of actually inviting, that's not an invitation. It's like, I'm inviting you, but do me a favor, don't show up. The Rav said that's exactly what Nusach Sfard does with Lecha Dodi when Yom Tov falls out on Shabbat. Shabbat is the day that we are inviting a Kadosh Baruch Hu into our homes. But don't come! But don't come! So the invitation is extended on some limited level. And because, in a sense, we're supposed to be in Yerushalayim and Beit HaMikdash and so on. It's a very interesting, whether he added on that word Ahava, I don't remember that in the Shir, because I remember what he said, what I just said. So that thought is clearly there. But it's interesting that that name of the book is called Yemei Zikaron. And why? Because sometimes we forget what's in the book. So I'll have to look it up and I'll have to see. Okay, so we'll get back to it.
The first two and the last two deal with Shabbos, and the middle ones don't really.
They all deal with Acharit HaYamim. They all deal with Yemot HaMashiach. Shlomo Levi Al-Kavatz proposed the idea, a Kabbalistic idea. He didn't propose it, but he develops this, that every single Shabbat, for 24 hours, it's a minuscule of the atmosphere of Messianic days. And that's why the sections that are lifted out of Tanakh come from Yeshayahu. From Hitori, Hitori, Lo Tevoshi, Lo Tikomi, and Hit Narim Yafakumi, all of these. You can find them in the Haftarot between Tisha B'Av and Rosh Hashanah, from Perek Mem until the end. That's basically the idea. And some of the Zmirot echo this as well. Me'ein Olam Haba, Yom Shabbat Menucha. We sing about this, sometimes we don't realize what we're singing. But that's really what it is. Okay. When was the first time anybody introduced to us the notion that there are 613 mitzvot? I can ask each and every one of you. I'm sure you'll try to scratch your head and remember how far back it was when you heard that there was a number of 613. But I'm not going to take such a census now. I would tell you that the first time I heard about Taryag was I was in first grade, and we were learning Chumash and even Chumash Rashi here and there. And source number one, when Rashi in Parshat Vayishlach, commenting on the pasuk Im Lavan Garti, Rashi says, Yaakov Avinu says, I resided with Lavan for all those years. It was 20 years. So Rashi says, in a second explanation, what Garti is, Gimel Reish Taf Yud, says, Begimatria Taryag. It's the numerical equivalent of 613. It's not only the numerical equivalent, but it's the letters. Garti shuffled around is Taryag. Klomar, that is to say, Im Lavan HaRasha Garti. Yeah, I resided in the domicile of Lavan, but Taryag Mitzvot Shamarti, but I still kept the mitzvahs, which is nothing rubbed off from the evil father-in-law Lavan. V'lo lemadti mimasav ha-ra'im. I didn't learn, wasn't inspired by anything that went on in Lavan's house. Now, as a first grader, this was a great idea. As a matter of fact, it became such an important statement that many times when you read the pasuk, you just go right into Rashi. Im Lavan Garti v'Taryag Mitzvot Shamarti. You don't even realize it's Rashi. It's not the pasuk. But it's a great idea. Of course, many years later, when you learn the Ramban on this, you discover there's this real problem with this idea of Im Lavan Garti v'Taryag Mitzvot Shamarti. Number one, Ramban says that when Chazal say that Avotenu, our forefathers, observed mitzvot before Matan Torah, that was only in Eretz Yisrael. And the proof is that when Yaakov was by Lavan, he marries two sisters. That's a biblical prohibition. A biblical prohibition. V'ishalach uta lo tikach. So how can he be married to Rachel and Leah at the same time and say he is observing Taryag Mitzvot? So Ramban says that's why when Yaakov returns with his family to Eretz Canaan, one of the two has got to go. And it was the Hashgacha that it was Rachel who was going to die. And that opens up Pandora's box. Where is Kever Rachel? Is it, you know, deep in Eretz Yisrael in the land of Bethlehem, as we observe it today? Or was it on the border of Eretz Yisrael coming in? And it's somewhere else. Maybe it's in Nachalat Binyamin. Maybe it's in the Golan Heights. Called Beramah Nishma. So there are different suggestions as to really where is Kever Rachel. But the Ramban really opens this up for discussion. And challenging this whole idea that by Lavan, he observed Taryag Mitzvot. The second point is, how can anybody observe Taryag Mitzvot? It's a halachic impossibility. Because a human being cannot be simultaneously a man and a woman. Today, maybe you could, I don't know. And a Kohen, and a Kohen Gadol, and a Levi, and not a Kohen. How can you do that? And a Bechor, and a Melech, and a Navi, and a Shofet, and Nasi of the Sanhedrin. You can't be all of the above. It's impossible. In the optimum conditions of Beit HaMikdash up and running, functioning properly, and most of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, so you have more mitzvot under those circumstances, but not all the mitzvot. And then, of course, you have certain mitzvot that we've become conditioned that the word mitzvah means a good deed. Sometimes you interchange it with the word chesed. You know, somebody's doing a chesed, right? I had the funniest experience just a few days ago. I was visiting my mother in Neve Amit, so in Ramat Eshkol. So there, they have all kinds of workers in this CUD room there. So there were some B'nai Yishmael who worked there as well. Very fine people, I must say. Very fine people, dedicated workers and so on. And one of the Israeli women went out of her way to help out one of the aides there. And it's this Arab fellow. He goes, Tiska the mitzvahs. I doubled over and laughed. I thought it was so funny. And he looks at me and he says, Did I say something wrong? I said, it's not what you said, but who said it just made it so funny. Because I try to explain to him what the phrase is. He picks it up from all the schnarrs. You know, the people go like, Tiska the mitzvahs, Tiska the mitzvahs. But when you say Tiska the mitzvahs, what are you saying? You should have the opportunity to do another chesed, another chesed, another chesed, mitzvah, goreret, mitzvah, and so on. So that's the popular use of the word mitzvah. But the halachic definition of mitzvah, it's a command of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's all it is. Now, some of the commands are on the good side of life And some of the commands deal with some of the sour sides of life. So if the Rambam will include in the listing of 613 mitzvot, the mitzvah of divorce, of gerushin, nobody in a million years is going to say that when the Rambam suggests before Yom Kippur, you should try your best to upgrade your mitzvahs. So you go over to your wife before Yom Kippur and you love her dearly and you say, I need another mitzvah, you know, you have to tip the scale. You can't do that. That's not what a Kadosh Baruch Hu was interested. And so too, Kadosh Baruch Hu had to give us the halachot of kvura and evel. Nobody's going to, so there is chesed involved in there too, but these are sad parts. Or the laws of damage, for that matter. Or the laws of nizikin. Imagine a person goes through life and never damaged somebody else. So Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to hold them accountable. Why didn't you fulfill the mitzvah of heishivet hagzela asher gazal? You know why? Because I never stole. The Torah says, if you steal, correct it. Return. You have to do more than that too. But the first thing you have to do is return the stolen goods. And that's a mitzvah. Heishivet hagzela asher gazal. So you go through life, you never fulfill that mitzvah. Why? Because you never stole. So Kadosh Baruch Hu is not going to hold you accountable. Well, as I heard once from Rabbi Moshe Tendler, he says, and if a person goes through life without an Aveira, so Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to hold him accountable that he didn't do the mitzvah of tshuva? I mean, you never had to bring a Korban Chatat or a Korban Hashem and so on. Besides that, Kadosh Baruch Hu will be thrilled. The point is, Tatariyak mitzvahs is a collective number. It takes into consideration all of Klai Yisrael. In all of life's areas of concern, the good, the not so good, and so on, that's what Tariyak Mitzvah is. It was never given to an individual, and hence an individual cannot fulfill Tariyak Mitzvot. However, on a homiletic level, one can say that whatever the maximum halachic responsibilities that a human being has, whether it's a man or woman, whether it's a Kohen or Kohen Gadol or Levi or Yisrael, or whatever it might be, that maximum is called his or her taryag. It's not the number 613, but it's just it's a concept of the maximum. So whatever Avraham Yaakov Avinu was obliged to abide by when he was living by Lavan, he was okay. He was beseder. Kadosh Baruch Hu could find no fault in what he was doing. So that could be the interpretation of taryag mitzvot shamarti. With 613, as we say in halachic lingo, lav dafka. It's not 613. So that's a plausible type of understanding. But you cannot suggest that Avoteinu, that they as an individual, observe 613 where it's a halachic impossibility. The other suggestion that you might say is that behind each mitzvah in the Torah, there is some type of spiritual improvement that takes place. That you're not going to find in the Rambam. That you're going to find more in Hasidic Sfarim and Kabbalistic Sfarim. What might be achieved by the performance of a particular mitzvah. And one could perhaps suggest that Avotenu, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, achieved those spiritual advancements without going through the formal performance of a mitzvah. And that's something even more plausible, because then you could accept the notion that Avraham kiyem kol ha-Torah kula. You know, before Matan Torah, the Medrash even goes on to say, afilu erev tavshilin. Afilu erev tavshilin. So I have a drasha on that, fine. Drasha, you know, is one that has a nice place. But what exactly is Chazal trying to say? That even the add-ons, the Rabbanans, there was something about Avotenu that they had an inkling about what's to come in Matan Torah. Not on a physical, material level, but on some other order of understanding, and they were able to achieve it. And this we can understand, Avotenu, you know, fulfilled. The Rambam clearly didn't see the literal that Avraham Avinu or Yitzchak Yaakov kept the mitzvot, because he says clearly in the Mishnah commentary to Masechet Chulin, the end of the seventh parak, there he talks about Brit Milah and Gid Hanasher. These are mitzvot of Sefer Breshit. He says, these mitzvot Yaakov Avinu never heard of. Never heard of Gid and Asher. Al-Kein le'achlu b'nei Yisrael Gid and Asher, that Yaakov Avinu, he may have taken upon himself as a private minhag, but that's the maximum. But it did not obligate anybody. What obligates Klal Yisrael is Matan Torah at Har Sinai. And hence, nothing from Sefer Breshit is used as the proof text for a positive mitzvah. They even argue and say, one second, you open up Sefer Chinuch, and you see that in Sefer Breshit, Parshat Breshit, you have Piri Avir Rivya, Pruvu, procreation, and you have Brit Milah. These mitzvot you can also snuff out from other psukim, like Parshat Tazria, uviyom hashmini yimol b'sar olato. The reason why Sefer Chinuch addresses these mitzvot in Sefer Breshit, because there's hardly any mitzvot there, so at least in this long-winded series of letters that the father, the author, writes to his son, so he should have on Shabbos afternoon something to do with his friends, instead of playing marbles, but they should talk a little Parshat HaShavua, and from Shmot on, he's got so much material on every Parsha, and Sefer Breshit hardly anything, so at least he has three examples of mitzvot from Parshat Breshit, Parshat Lech Lecha, and Parshat Vayishlach. That's why. But that doesn't mean that those are the absolute proof texts. And one of the proofs is the first Rashi in Chumash, where it says, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, lo haya yitzricht latchil et haTorah, ela me'achodesh zeh lachem rosh chodeshim, shehu ha-mitzvah rishonah, shenitztava Yisrael. According to this Medrash, we're questioning why do we have to know the whole creation story, the Noah story, the epics of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, if Torah is a book of law, so let's get to business, down to business, with the first mitzvah. And he names the first mitzvah, it's in Parshat Bo, the Kiddush HaChodesh, HaChodesh Elachem Rosh Chodeshim, which means that the Medrash of Rabbi Yitzchak, that Rashi's quoting, did not see the three mitzvot that Sefer Chinuch gives credit in Sefer Breshit as being credited to Sefer Breshit. But you must find it elsewhere in the Chumash. And the Pasuk, Al-Kein Lo Yochul B'nei Yisrael, the Gidon Asher, according to an opinion in the Mishnah, was interpolated by Moshe Rabbeinu onto, or grafted onto, Sefer Breshit. But the Pasuk doesn't belong there. It really belonged in, let's say, Parshat Shmini or Parshat Re'eh, where all the other forbidden foods, Machalot Asurim, are written. But because they wanted to associate it with the episode of Yaakov and the Malach, so Moshe Rabbeinu was told to stick it on Parshat Vayishlach. But it was never a Parshat Vayishlach concern. Avraham Avinu did do Brit Milah, but Rambam says that's not what obligates us. What obligates us is the fact that it was given at Har Sinai. Okay, so we have a notion. But as we mentioned, often enough, no specific listing of the 613 comes down from Sinai. At best, and this is subject to conjecture, at best the number 613 is Misinai. So the Gemara, source number 2, says, Darash Rav Simlai, the end of Masechet Makot, 613 mitzvot nemru lo Moshe. Here the Gemara says very clearly, 613 are for Moshe Rabbeinu. And how do we understand that? Is first of all the breakdown of 365 laven, 365 don'ts, kiminyan yimot hachama, corresponding to the days of the sun, the solar calendar. Umatayim arbim v'shmona, asay, the 248 positive, keneged evarav shel adam, corresponding to the limbs of the human being. Amarav hamnuna, mikra, what is exactly, how can you see this as an allusion in the pasuk? A pasuk in Parshat Zot Bracha, the end of the Torah. Torah tzivalanu Moshe morasha kilat Yaakov. Torah, taf vav reish he, gematria, is shit me'ah v'chad sari havi, is 611. 611, taf reish is 600, vav and he is 11, 611. 611, we heard from Moshe. Torah tzivalanu Moshe. But another two, Anokh Hashem Lekecha, and Lo Yir Lechai Elim Achim Apanai, the first two of the Aseret HaDibrot, Mipi HaGvura Shemanum, we heard directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and not via Moshe Rabbeinu. So you take out your calculator, and you see that there's 611 plus 2, that's going to get you to 613. That's the Gemara. The question is, in terms of the value of this Medrash, is this Medrash coming to teach us an absolute fact? Or is this Medrash also in the realm of Asmachta? It's an allusion to something, but you know you don't have to take it that seriously. That is clearly the point of departure between the Rambam and some of the others. So in source number 3, the reason that we've assembled here today, Sefer Mitzvot, so the Rambam says in Sefer Mitzvot, in his first of 14 introductory paragraphs, Shorish Aleph, Hashorish HaRishon, She'ein ra'ui limnot bichlal hazeh ha-mitzvot she'ein midrabanan. You cannot count, include into the 613 any of the rabbinic add-ons. Da, ki zeh ha'inyan lo haya ra'ui la'orer alav le'biuro. This really shouldn't have attracted much attention. Ki achar she'hayan l'shonat Talmud. I mean, it's an open gemara. L'shonat, in Yiddish, in the yeshiva, they'd say it's a beferisha gemara. It's an open gemara. And here's the quote that we just read from source 2. 613 mitzvot nemru lo misinai. Eich nomar, how could we say? Eich nomar b'davar shu medrabanan. Shu b'chlal ha-minyan. It says, Torah tziva lanu Moshe. So this 611 plus 2 equals 613 is from Moshe. So why am I going to make a big fuss about this, says the Rambam? Aval he'irunu alav. It's been brought to my attention. Mipnei she'ta'u bo rabim. Many have erred. Many. He's not talking about some isolated author. He's talking about many, many who have included, Manu, they've included, they've counted. Ner Chanukah, Mikra Megillah, reading of the Megillah on Purim. Bichlal mitzvot aseh. V'chein mea brachot b'chol yom. You're supposed to say 100 brachot each day. O nichum aveilim, o biko cholim, o kfurat meitim, o halbashat arumim. V'chishuv tkufot 18 yom ligmor. Chishuv tkufot is figuring out of season, and the 18 days that you have to complete halel. Many of those who counted mitzvot have included, not all, some mishmash of what he just read here. Now, who's he talking about? So first of all, he's talking about the author of the Halachot Gedolot, 7th century from the days of the Geonim. We don't have an absolute name of the author. That's why he's referred to anonymously as the Behag Beitei Gimel Baal, the author of Halachot Gedolot. Very important work. And he includes Ner Chanukah and Kriyat Megillah and Purim as part of Taryag. He was the pioneer. He was the first one to sit down and draw up a listing of the 613. So as a pioneer, you have to give him credit, because that's how progress is made. Somebody pioneers in a field, and then somebody comes later and discovers that the person made a mistake. But the notion that we have to have a listing was adopted. The next one who, according to the Rambam, made the mistake was Rav Saadia Gaon. I mean, he was a giant, Rav Saadia Gaon. And yet, in the famous poem that Sfaradim say till this very day, the Azharot of Rav Saadia Gaon and Chag HaShavuot, we in Ashkenazim sing the song of Akdamot, Milim V'Shorei Tushuta. They have something else, a beautiful poem, long-winded poem. The whole poem is 613 mitzvot, poetically put together. And yet, that's where you see what Rav Saadia Gaon had in mind for a mitzvah. So he has the reading of the Megillah on Purim, and he has the lighting Hanukkah candles, and other dinim de Rabbanan, and there were others. And the Rambam is suggesting that there were many, many who were off the mark here. Just a small, interesting note, that everything that he mentions here is indeed the Rabbanan, even Nichum Avelim B'Kachoylim. The Rambam in the Mishnah Torah says that the biblical mitzvah is V'Avta L'Reacha Kamocha. But, you know, not everybody really knows how to fulfill that mitzvah. So what Chazal did was they authored a program. Do A, B, C, D. So the rabbinic obligation for Nichum Avelim is the obligation for Nichum Avelim is rabbinic, but the fulfillment is clearly Doraita. It's clearly a biblical fulfillment of V'Avta L'Reacha Kamocha. But because the obligation is only rabbinic, so Rambam says it doesn't belong in the listing of Taryag. And that's true with Bikur Cholim as well. What he says about Kfurat Meitim, that's somewhat troubling. Somewhat troubling. Because the Rambam actually does count Kfura as one of the 613. He does. And this is the kinds of things that I look for when I try to check out, did the Rambam change his mind? Because this is this is written before the Mishnah Torah. And before the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam throws in Kfurat Meitim, and he says these are clearly rabbinic. I mean, the fulfillment is V'Avta L'Reacha Kamocha. Yet in the Mishnah Torah, the Rambam clearly says that Kfura Boy B'Yom, that the essential biblical mitzvah is that a person is buried the day of his passing, but not always is that feasible. Ki Kavor Tikpurenu B'Yomahu. A person shall be buried. Of course, the context there, Pashat Ki Tetze, is someone who was executed by Beit Din. And he was his body was exhibited publicly so that people should really get shook up. And they should realize what happens, but don't leave that body exposed for too long, because it's a bizayon, it's not nice. Ki kavor tikparenu bayomahu. And the Rambam says in the Mishneh Torah that from here you see that there's a mitzvah for everybody's burial. And he says it, that the burial for every individual is a mitzvah taseh. He counts it as one of the 613. In the Sefer Mitzvot he counts it as the 613. The question is, why did he throw in here Kfurat Meitim as equating it with Nichum Avelim and Bikur Cholim, where these are rabbinic responsibilities, but fulfillment of a biblical idea. But kvura seems to be a biblical responsibility. So that's a little bit of a question. I don't have an exact answer. All I know is when I see something like that, I stop and I ask the question, and I don't have all the answers. I have to research this a little bit further. But it's something that does bother me. And the reason why the Rambam mentioned about Hallel, because he's a stickler to the view that Hallel is only rabbinic. Only rabbinic. There's no such Hallel d'Oraita. Now, many have argued with him on this. The Ravid, the Ramban, they have argued. Some have included Hallel on the Chagim as part of the 613. But the Rambam says no. And that's what he says. Ukvar hit ba'er shekol ma shetknu ha-nevi'im alayhem ha-shalom shamar achar Moshe Rabbeinu u'gamkin mid-rabbanan. And we've explained that even certain additions that are to be found in the days of the Nevi'im, they're halachically classified as the Rabbanan. And that's important too. And anything that has the tag on it, that it's rabbinic, is not part of and cannot be part of the 613. Cannot be any rabbinic add-ons in this list. This some yes and some no, some rabbinic add-ons are in the list and some are not, is that he rejects this all wholeheartedly. Amru mishamru, no matter who said it, Amru mishamru, I don't care how great the person was. Because Rambam knows he's starting up with great people here. He knows that. He says, it doesn't make a difference. He says, the truth has to be stated. Hinei be'arnu inyan ze ha-shoresh u'mofto ad shelo nishar bo safei klal al shum adam. Well, I think I made myself perfectly clear, he says. Nobody's going to have a problem with my viewpoint on this issue. This is, the Rambam is really, really has gone out on a limb on this notion. Now, to furthermore, to show that in the book, Sefer Mitzvot, and I have the edition of Rav Kapach, but there are many, many different editions out there today, that the Rambam took pains to present the order properly. Again, he divides the mitzvot into two camps, the positive and the negatives, ta'aseh, lelo ta'aseh. So he's got 248, then his listing of 365. It's not haphazard at all. He's got a specific logical pattern to the 1 until 248, and from 1 to 365. And the truth of the matter is, nobody really, really took the pains to do this until, and as I mentioned a few weeks ago, acquaintance of mine from Be'er Sheva, Professor A.B. Feintuch, who's a Talmud of the Rav as well, and he's a serious Talmud Chacham, he's a professor of mathematics, of all things, at Ben-Gurion University, and has been teaching Rambam Sefer Mitzvot and Eshabashir for many, many years in Shchuna Hay in Be'er Sheva. And he published a Sefer called Pekudei Yesharim on the Rambam, Sefer Mitzvot. And he has a very, very nice thesis that, except for the fact that the Rambam never told this to us, but that doesn't make a bit of a difference, it just starts to make sense. From this tshuva, source number 4, we understand, we just look at the bottom of the page where it's underlined, Val seder haminyan shashmatat karka kuf lamedalid bahashmatat ksafim kuf memhei kahu lefi shehitchalti b'mitzvot shehen tluyot b'karka kugon ma'asrot bikurim b'chala maniti al sidran hashmatat karka umaniti hashmatat ksafim im mitzvot shebehen nitinat metaltelin mimono shel adam. The one of the questions in this particular responsum was, how come in your Sefer Mitzvot, the mitzvah of not tilling the land in the Shemitah, in the sabbatical year, is mitzvah 134, Kuf Lamed Daled, and in the same sabbatical year, there's also the mitzvah of cancellation of loans of Shemitah Ksafim. Why is that 141? Why the gap between 134 and 141? So of course you have to see what's in 135, 136, 137, 138, what happened here? Now the Rambam could have just, brushed this away. But he gives a very, very logical answer. He says, I started with the agricultural mitzvot. So I continued with the agricultural mitzvot. Now, as of course, the Shemitah is, there's an agricultural side to it. So I included it in the section that I discussed, agricultural mitzvot. But then there are other mitzvot that have to do with giving of something, of your property, of your money to others. I felt that that's where Shmitat Ksafim belonged. So even though Shmita is Shmita, it's the same year, but they're conceptually two different mitzvot, and they belong in different places. So what the Rambam is teaching us in this is that I gave a lot of thought to the order. There's nothing haphazard about the order. And there are several other responsum in dealing with the same thing, where someone will ask, why is this mitzvah here and not over there? And the Rambam gives a very logical explanation. Why he did it? Which clearly indicates that the Rambam thought out this issue very, very clearly. So, what does Professor Feintuch do? He noticed something. This is, you know, you have to have a little siyata d'shmaya to help you out here. The Rambam talks about ta'amei ha-mitzvot, mitzvah rationale, late in life, in his Mor Nevuchim. Mor Nevuchim, he's over 51 years old, he's writing Mor Nevuchim. Most of his works are done already. And in the third section of Mor Nevuchim, Chele Gimel, and there are only three, he has a whole long-winded chapter, several chapters rather, on ta'amei ha-mitzvot, mitzvah rationale. And what he does is he takes all of the Torah and slices the pie into 14 sections of mitzvah rationale. Do these 14 sections correspond to the 14 books of the Mishneh Torah? Almost. Not 100%. It's what we say in geometry, similar but not congruent. They're not congruent triangles. It's not absolute. The sides are the angles are the same, but the side lengths are different. There are some differences, some noticeable differences even, in the classification of the mitzvot as he has it in Mishneh Torah, the codification, the way he codifies it, and the way he sets it up as 14 categories for ta'amei mitzvot, for mitzvah rationale. And what's absolutely fascinating is that when one starts going through the listing of the positive mitzvot and sefer mitzvot, something that Rambam writes before the Mishneh Torah, he's about 31, 32 years old now, 20, 25 years before the Mishneh Mor Nevuchim, one notices that the grouping follows the identical pattern that the Rambam will later on use to divide all the mitzvot in terms of rationale for mitzvot, ta'amei mitzvot. And you start with number one, and then you get to a certain point, you realize, now we're in a new category, and now we're in a new category, and it ends up with 14 categories. And then when you flip to the negative, the lotase, from 1 to 365, the exact same pattern repeats itself. From number 1 until whatever number, it becomes one category, and it corresponds to the category 1 of the mitzvot aseh, and vice versa. So until you get to the 14 categories, which means that the not only is the Sefer Mitzvot introduced with 14 introductory comments, and we just learned the first one in source number 3, Shorash Aleph, but there are 14 Shorashim, and these are what we call the ground rules. What is a mitzvah and what's not a mitzvah? Why did I think this pasuk is a mitzvah and perhaps that pasuk? Why is kedoshim to you not a mitzvah? And why is vasul emtzitzit is a mitzvah? He's explaining the rules, how I figured this out. What sources do I use? Which midrash halacha do I derive my information from? He has all that in the 14 categories. So not only is the introductory work based on the number 14, but the entire sefer, the positive and then the negative, is based on the number 14, or revolves around the number 14, which means the whole book is a triangle. It's one big triangle, where the part on top is the introduction, and then it splits, where one side of the lower part of the triangle is the positive, the lower side on the left is the negative, and you end up with 14, 14, 14, 14. Hello, there are 14 books in the Mishneh Torah of the Rambam also. And so everything here about 14. So I noticed a comment of Rav Kapach. I'm glad that he said it, because I've been saying this for a while. But you know, when you find somebody else making that comment, Rav Kapach says, "Hamispar arba'asar, the number 14, chaviv al Rabbeinu mishuma, for some odd reason, was beloved by the Rambam. Kan kava arba'asar kladim, here he established 14 introductory comments." Rav Kapach is not aware of the discovery of Professor Feintuch, which only adds to the usage of 14. It's Sifro Mishne Torah Chilek L'Arba'asar Svarim. We know that. The Yad Chazaka is even given the nickname Yad Chazaka. Yud Dalet is 14. B'Sifro Moren Evochim Chilek Gimel Perek Lam and Hey Siveget Kol Mitzvot HaTorah L'Arba'asar Kvutzot. This is what I mentioned. That this is known. That the Moren Evochim Chilek Gimel, that the Rambam divided all of the Torah into 14 categories for purposes of explaining the mitzvah rationale. Ve'ein leniach, you cannot assume, says Rav Kapach, shekol eile, all of this, itramuye itramu mebli meisim. It just happened without the Rambam giving some thought to this. It's impossible that this is all coincidental, that they all ended up to be 14. Rav Kapach is—he has no answer to this. All he's remarking is, "This is really amazing, and there's got to be something to it." So I think in one of the shiurim a year ago, 2 years ago, I made reference to Rav Nochum Rabinowitz, the great Rosh Hashiva of Male Adumim, who raised the question: "Okay, so there's 14. We love 14. How come there are only 13 principles? There's Shlosha Sa Yisodot." Which then pan out to the poem of Ani Ma'amin Ben Munash Le'Masheh, 13 in the Siddur, and Yigdal is 13 lines. It's all reflecting the Rambam in the Perish HaMishnah, in Rambam's Mishnah commentary to the last chapter of Sanhedrin. And you have 13 categories of the basic tenets of Judaism. So Rav Nochum Rabinowitz says there's actually a 14th. The only thing is, it's not there in Masechet Sanhedrin. That's a question. Did it get lost? Did the Rambam, for whatever reason, not mention it? But he says the 14th is free will, the doctrine of free will, because the Rambam does call it in Hilchot Tshuva, Perakei and Vav, he calls it the Ikar, the word Ikarim, which means these are doctrines, basic tenets of Yadut. And it's not there in the 13. And the Rambam says categorically that without the doctrine of free will, you can close the shop. There's no reason to be responsible to the Torah and the mitzvot. So he says there are 14, even the Yisodot. And the only problem that we have now is more of a technical problem. How come the Rambam, it's left out? It's not why how come the Rambam left it out. It's how come it's left out in the manuscripts and the writings. Maybe the Rambam did leave it out for some reason, but that doesn't mean he only has 13. He's got 14 there too. And I think I mentioned in the shir, so I always quip that when the kids get up and sing Yigdal in shul, and they get to the last line, they sing Meitim Yechai El Borov Chasdo twice. Really, because it doesn't fit the niggin, right? I said they sing the last line twice to remind us that there might be a 14th line. Should be a 14th line.
Maybe he didn't know what the Rambam was going to make people make the mistake of writing out Hashem's name. And that's why he didn't do it.
Why writing out?
Well, you know, maybe people didn't.
It's Yud Daled.
That's what I'm saying. If he would have made it 15.
But it's not 15. He made it 13. It was that's 13, but even they could have made it 14.
No, but
in general, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that we don't even use Yud Hey for a number. We use Tet Vav.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
But yeah, but the Rambam knew that also.
No. Look,
everything came out to be 14. Everything came out to be 14. All right, let's take a look what we have now on the second side. Yes, we do have a second time. And I'm going to be expanding on next year, Mitzvah Shem, which is next week, yes, on the Rambam Mitzvah number 5, positive Mitzvah number 5. Because on this Mitzvah, the Rambam also stands alone vis-a-vis others who counted the Mitzvah. This is the Mitzvah of Tefillah, of Davening. Let's start with the flip side, the Ramban. And the author of the Halachot Gedolot, they do not include statutory, that means regular, tefillah, on a daily basis, as a biblical command. They understand that the Torah does speak of tefillah. How can you miss it? In Torah, Nevi'im, Ketuvim, you have tefillah all the time. But those tefillot are all crisis mode tefillah. Something is is a burning issue here. And we're pleading, petitioning Kadosh Baruch Hu to get us out of a bad situation. El na refan Allah, the tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu for Miriam's health. Whatever the tefillah might be, raising his hands, the Refroset Kapayim Mitzrayim, Kadosh Baruch Hu should stop a particular plague, and so on. The tefillot that we see are generally crisis mode tefillot. Shlomo Melech in Melachim Aleph Perichet, he talks about what Beit HaMikdash was all about. And fundamentally, he says Beit HaMikdash is an international house of prayer. And he gives example after example of what you might need a Kadosh Baruch Hu for the difficulties in life, whether they might be war, famine, disease. I mean, nothing's new. Nothing's been updated since Shlomo Melech's time. These are life's difficulties and challenges. And to this end, we need a Kadosh Baruch Hu when a person is in deep trouble. But from there, you don't see the idea of regular tefillah. There, Shlomo Melech talks about the Shmo al Rina tefillah of crisis tefillah. And that's how the Ramban understands it. Ramban, with a nun. Says, yes, a crisis tefillah, clearly do'aita. Which means, and it's very subjective. Because for one person, he might be davening 10 times a day, and the other person, once in 10 years. Each person goes through different modes of living, and you have your different challenges. And, that's where it begins, and that's where it ends. The Rambam comes along, and he says, beyond crisis tefillah, which the Rambam agrees to, and he says it's an independent framework of Tariyak Mitzvot, and so that we don't mix up, he gives it a different name. He calls it Za'aka. Za'aka means to zo'ek takadosh baruch hu, to yell. Because the word Za'aka already smacks of crisis. Right? People don't, a person just yells stam, there's something wrong with him. But a person is yelling, that means a person is deeply calling out because he or she is in trouble. So that's what he calls Za'aka. And again, Za'aka could be for drought, it could be for famine, it could be for war, it could be for epidemic, whatever it is. But these are crisis mode tefillot, and the Rambam calls it Za'aka, and he's got it in the Mishnah Torah as well. It's under the category of Hilchot Taniyot. That's what he talks about. He doesn't talk about an Hilchot Tefillah. He talks about an Hilchot Taniyot, about fasting, because fasting is one of the expressions that we do when we are zo'ek, when we're in the process of Za'aka. But here in Sefer Mitzvot, number 5, it's pretty early in the game. He talks about tefillah. Ba'mitzvah ha-mishit hi she-tzivanu le-ovdo, to serve him, le-ovdo yit-ale, yit-ale means Kadosh Baruch Hu. U-kvar nichpal tzivui ze pa'amim, not pa'amayim, means pa'amim. This command is found in various places in the Chumash. Amar, it says in Parashat Mishpatim, ba'avartem et Hashem Elokechem, ve'amar, Voto tavodu ve'amar voto tavod ve'amar in Parshat Ekev ulavdo. You have phrases of service of God. That service of God doesn't really tell me tefillah. The Torah is telling us 3-4 places, and you shall serve God. You shall serve God. You shall serve God. So what does that mean? Apa pisha zehatzivui gam kein minat zivuyim. Even though this zivuyim hakolelim, this kind of pasuk, serve God, seems to be of a general nature. And psukim of a general nature, the Rambam does not count into the scheme of Taryag. Like Kedoshim to you, you shall be holy. That's not a mitzvah, that's a frame of spiritual life. That's not a specific mitzvah. To be a specific mitzvah, it's got to have a definition of an action, of doing something. Kemoshe bi'er b'shoresh harvi'i, in that introductory category, in the fourth shoresh, in the fourth paragraph, he says that if it's a general nature, it's not a mitzvah. Hine yesh ba yichud, there is something specific about avodat Hashem, shehu tziva b'tfilah. It's the command of daily prayer, daily davening. And he quotes a medrash lashon sifri, ulavdo zu tfilah. Vamru gam kein, ulavdo ze talmud. We're not going to deal with this now, we'll deal with this next week. That in one swipe, there's a connection between tefillah and Talmud Torah, both under the category of Avodat Hashem. And we'll see the connection. U'b'mishnato shel Rabbi Elezer b'no shel Rabbi Yosef Haglili amru, minayin le'ikar tefillah b'toch ha-mitzvot. How do you know that the idea of tefillah is an integral part of the listening of the mitzvot? Me'achal, from the following pasuk, et Hashem elokecha tira ve'oto tavod. V'amru be Avdehu b'torato, avdehu b'migdasho. You should serve God with studying His Torah, and serve God by serving Him in His mikdash. Klomar, that is to say, lalechet sham litpalel bo v'negdo kemo shebi'er Shlomo alav shalom. You should daven there, or in its direction. Nekdo means opposite it, but it means in its direction. So when does a person daven there? If a person there. If you're there, follow the other regel, you're there. In the chatzer, a kohen can get even closer, he can get into the kodesh, and the kohen gadol can get into the kodesh kodeshim. But that's all considered at the mikdash. But if you're not at the mikdash, so then second best is the direction of the mikdash, right? So if you don't know the direction of the mikdash, so that's why you have to have the kotel compass, right? So kotel compass is going to tell you, you know, what the direction of the mikdash. So you have one that tells me north, and the orange tells me which is the direction of the kotel. And indeed, it's in this direction. That's why they made their own kodesh in this direction, right? That's what you need. That's what. But people don't realize what the Rambam's telling us. He's saying it's second best. No chachamikdash is second best. The best is to be there, and that's going to impact about the whole question about Aliyah going on Har Habayit today. What's there to do? People say, all right, forget about the political implications and the security issues, which I'm not even going to get into here. But people have raised the halachic issue. What are you going to do on Har Habayit? Take some pictures. Who said you're allowed to go on Har Habayit? Just take some pictures. Yeah, there's no korbanot, and you're not allowed to bow down. If you can bow down there, prostrate yourself, then it's a mitzvah, by the way. But you can't do that. They're going to throw you out right away. So what's left? There's only one thing left, and that's tefillah. But they don't let you daven either. So we're going to see next week that you can daven in your mind also. We're going to see that. Hirhur tefillah is also tefillah. All right, so we're going to begin with this next week in Mirz Hashem. So you can hold on to the page. If you want to put it back, I'll be happy to bring it to you. I hope I have no trouble getting back next week. But I'm supposed to be back Tuesday in the afternoon. So hopefully by Wednesday I'll be here.
Before he did.
What came up with that?
The 14.
Right.
Did he know the other one, the 14?